Good day. My name is Danette Breitenbach and I'm the Managing Editor of This Community. Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome Jackie May, the founder and editor of TWIG. Welcome, Jackie. Jackie's going to chat to us a little bit about this trends and what's happening in the world of fashion. Jackie, welcome so much. It's such a pleasure to chat to you. Please tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I'm a journalist by training and experience. I've been working in media for almost 40 years. I started at Fair Lady magazine and worked in their London office for a few years before going to the Sunday Times. Did lots of years working in educational television, making documentaries, and then back to print with the launch of the Times newspaper, which I spent 10 years working at, which was just absolutely fabulous. And then I worked as editor-in-chief for Marie Claire before launching TWIG. And besides being a journalist, I'm a mother, I'm a lifelong learner. I've just finished my MPhil in sustainable development, and I love gardening, swimming, yoga.
Sounds wonderful. What a great mix. So let's jump right in. Tell us or explain to us what TWIG means and what lies behind that. What is the work that you do?
Okay. So I launched TWIG with the objective of creating a lifestyle destination that did the opposite of what mainstream media was doing at the time, which was really just selling consumer goods without any consideration for the planet and people. So at that time, and I mean, it's amazing to think how things have developed and changed subsequent to that or since then, because I was really disillusioned by the scramble to sell imported, unsustainably made, often unethically made goods in all parts all parts of our lives: food, clothes, beauty products, home decor, etc., etc. But we started off trying to meet all those different pillars, but quite quickly the fashion element and the fashion pillar really kind of grew, and there was a response to our stories, and our interest grew as well in that subject. So it's really become kind of a fashion-focused magazine. And besides creating content, we work quite actively in the background in the industry, doing research, researching. At the moment, we're doing a lot of research around textile waste. We work with organizations in the city. We're based in Cape Town, in the city, with creating sewing circles with people who live on the streets to both share knowledge, also to learn from them about inherent skills. We do swap and mends. We really want to activate the circular economy with swapping to kind of grow the swapping trend. The swapping movement, rather, for the movement. And care is a big part of what we want to instill. Care for clothes, care for each other, care for the planet is a big part of what we're trying to instill in people. So we kind of movement, I would say we're a movement in some ways. I called it TWIG because at the time I didn't want to use the word eco or green. And I like the word TWIG. It kind of associated with something new, something fresh, something green. And we spelt it incorrectly because I couldn't register TWIG. But in fact, TWIG, I mean, is an old spelling of the word TWIG. So the association is still very much with a new direction, a new branch, new thinking. Fresh.
That's amazing. Such a lovely story. I really love that. Why is it so important that we need to be sustainable and have the circular economy, and why we need to care and be ethical? Why is that so important?
Well, I think, coming to the end of 2024, I think this has been a really, really hard year, with the wars, with the increasing divide between people, the binary nature of our storytelling, with the collapse of the plastic, the plastics conversations at COP29, with increasing climate change, with ongoing labor issues in manufacturing across the world. I think it's quite clear that the world really needs healing. People need to really take note of the damaged, you know, the damaged world that we live in. And it's really important that we look at the priorities and what's important, and that is each other. We have to take care of each other. We have to take care of people who, and when I say each other, it's not only our families and our friends. We actually have to take care of other beings, whether that's other people who might have different opinions to us, have different religions to us, but essentially we need to really care about living beings, plants, animals. What we've done to each other and to the planet is absolutely devastating and completely unethical. In some cases, it's kind of to the end of, we do that because we want to make more money, we want to develop, we want progress, but to what end? You know, we've caused so much damage in the process. So for me, I just see a world screaming out for care, the need to repair, and whatever level that is, whether you're focusing on climate change, whether you're focusing on biodiversity, whether you're focusing on unethical labor practices, healing of people who have mental issues, mental disorders. There's so many ways to be more caring about each other and the planet. So for me, I just don't see another way. I think it's vitally important.
So let's drill down a little deeper and let's take this to the fashion industry. So in 2019, you started the Twig Sustainable Fashion Awards. Can you tell us a little bit more about these and then what the motivation behind starting these? What was that?
So from a business perspective, I really needed to, you know, Twig was at the time, we were just publishing stories, I was doing research, I was really just starting to explore sustainable fashion in South Africa. And at the time, you know, besides a few stories that I'd seen, you know, local about local production, local designers, there was very little about sustainability in South Africa. I mean, we'd seen it growing and talked about elsewhere. And I really wanted to find out who was doing what and also celebrate the designers who were doing amazing work locally. So it had two objectives. One was to kind of start and grow an ecosystem of sustainable designers in South Africa, and secondly, to celebrate them, to award them and publicize these designers who were working in particular ways. And that we've just held our sixth edition, and I must tell you, every year I think, I wonder how many more, how much longer can we do this? And this year was probably the year we had the most nominations. Well, I mean, it's not, I think, I know. The most nominations. There were designers who we'd never heard of, which is really interesting because we do keep a handle on what's going on. So it was just so interesting to see upcoming designers we'd never heard of doing really interesting things, so committed to doing fashion sustainably. So it's so beautiful to see, to be honest. So that was the two things, and they've become a real highlight in our calendar. And I think for a lot of fashionistas, it's also really an important evening. I mean, most of our work happens before the actual event, and then the event is a coming together and a celebration, and it's at the end of the year. So, yeah, that's what they're about.
That sounds amazing. And I think that sustainable fashion is definitely, it's been sort of terms thrown around for a while, and something people are talking about. And in South Africa, we talk a lot about our clothing and our textile industry. And this industry has suffered in the past few years. And there's been effort to try and promote it. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's happening in that industry? How has these online stores like Shein and Tumi that have come in, how has this negatively influenced the industry? And what are we doing to try and, what's the word I'm looking for to try and mitigate this? Sorry.
So I don't know in numbers what the impact is, but I do know that government and SARS have been very concerned about it. So you may have seen on Twig yesterday, we posted an Instagram post about what SARS has done to increase the tariffs on small packages to make it less attractive to import this ultra-fast and ultra-cheap fashion, because it is impacting local stores and local online sales, or online sales of locally manufactured goods. And interestingly, before I came into this interview, I got a response from one of our retailers who said it's so unfortunate that many people believe that locally made fashion is too expensive, because I think we get confused between there's the designer fashion, which is obviously the more luxurious fashion designers like Sandiso Kamado, who are of a higher price point, but that's not the only locally made clothing there is in South Africa. There are also lots of retailers who are making clothing locally, which is affordable. So there's a bit of a misunderstanding there, which we'll address in the next couple of weeks. But so I think besides these new tariffs and new regulations to make it less attractive to import the cheap clothing, the Department of Trade and Industry has got a fantastic master plan, which is bringing all the retailers and manufacturers together to increase local manufacturing. And it's a voluntary kind of agreement or arrangement to import fewer clothes, increase localization, and the big drive is to increase job creation. And there's been amazing success. If you think about what TFG is doing, it's created, it's upgraded factories. So the factory conditions are much better, but also they've increased jobs. And then we're seeing that at Mr. Price, we're seeing that in lots of other of the big retailers. And I mean, obviously it makes business sense now because in some cases it's more expensive to manufacture elsewhere, but it's really wonderful to see the real drive is to grow this industry that we had once before, and obviously when globalization happened and the trade became easier, flooding the market, collapsed that industry. But let me go back to those two kind of streams of fashion, which is the designer fashion, which has really, really bloomed. Some of our big names, the local names, are doing wonderfully internationally, selling internationally, which is fantastic for them and their businesses. But they're also doing great stuff for the reputation of South African fashion, bringing, you know, eyes and ears and making people sit up and notice what's happening in South Africa. And that's good for everything. I mean, that's like that's the top level of fashion, but it impacts everything to the bottom and the cheaper fashion labels. So that's happening in terms of reputation, skills, storytelling, cultural narratives, and then we're having the industrial kind of push to localize manufacturing.
I really, that breakdown that you've given us and how you've explained it is really great, really makes it easy to understand, because I think there is that conception that we think that locally produced goods are more expensive. And then speaking about more expensive, recently it was Black Friday, and this is like a shopping spree. And I know it's more than a weekend and more than a day. It's sometimes over a week. So there is a culture that we have of consumption, overconsumption, overproduction. But there is a move to against this, where people are, like you said, swapping out and trying not to do this. What do you think is happening? Do you think this is Black Friday trend is a trend that's slowly starting to change as people realize they need to be more sustainable? And I saw on your Instagram, you called it Green Friday, which I loved. You crossed out the black and you put the green. And that was really lovely. So how do we kind of educate people about Black Friday so that it becomes less about hyper-consumption and more about sustainable consumption?
You know, I thought about this question or this point before coming to this interview, and I was thinking, even though people are becoming more conscious about hyperconsumption, and with the Netflix movie called Buy Now that is trending and everybody's watching it and talking about it, we're also seeing an increase in consumption of fast fashion. So it's like, even though awareness is growing, so is the unsustainable consumption. And I just don't know how the two are going to marry, and the awareness about the damage and the kind of the fast fashion and hyperconsumption, when it's actually going to sink deeply enough to change behavior. Because I think, how do you change human behavior? You know, you think, you watch the horrors and you watch the news about floods, you watch the news about people dying because of heat waves, you're watching all of this news, and we're all watching it, and you think, how much more has to happen before people really change their behavior? And we're not actually seeing in the real numbers a true change of behavior. So it might look like there's more consciousness, but when you look at the real figures, it's not happening. So, you know, we at Twig try really hard to spread news and, you know, do what we can to make people aware of what we believe should be the future of consumption and production, because we can focus on SDG 12, which is the Sustainable Development Goal around responsible consumption and production. You know, we're a tiny little drop in the ocean, and in terms of our following and how much money we have to spend on media and boosting our Facebook pages, which we barely do because we don't have that kind of budget. But if you look at brands, the big fast fashion brands, and I have heard how much money gets spent on Facebook and Meta to make sure that people see their goods for sale. Like, how do we stand a chance? How do we stand a chance against, like, Amazon saying that buy now, with new trends? I mean, this conversation is about trends, like bringing out new trends all the time to make sure people are buying the new color, the new pair of pants, the new thing that you have to have this season. I mean, when I'm feeling very despondent, I feel like I'm at war, because at war against the giants, because they are giants. And I mean, they all have to stay in business, and they've got jobs to keep and people to pay, but it's, how do we get those big corporations to be selling responsibly and making responsibly and selling less and extracting less resources? It's a conundrum. It really is a conundrum.
So staying with that kind of thought, what is trans-seasonal fashion? Can you explain it to us a little bit, and also why trends are a swear word in the fashion sector right now? But I think you've also touched on that a little bit.
So I'll start off with why I think trends are a swear word. And I think, you know, there is, you know, you can use the word trend in a positive way. You know, there's a trend, I mean, positive way, or in a way that doesn't imply that it's being something that's manufactured. Well, let's talk a negative thing, but there is a trend that climate, that the temperatures are increasing. So there's a trend. There's a trend in people being more interested in fitness, you know, those sorts of things. But the why I think of trends as a swear word is that it's been used by big brands to manufacture trends, to sell people more clothes, or I'll use clothes, but I mean, if you think, and you can think about beauty as well, there's always a new trend, a new product. We have to sell, I mean, there used to be two seasons a year. There used to be a winter collection of clothing and a summer collection of clothing. Now some brands bring out 52 new collections, or 52 new drops, or 52 new, you know, every, there's a weekly new product, and they have to make it look new and insist that the consumer needs to buy this to be on trend. So to sell more clothes and to compete against your other, you know, your competitors, you've got to make sure that you've got something new on trend, but you've created that trend. Yeah, so that's why I think it's a swear word. So trans-seasonal fashion kind of counters that, because a trans-seasonal look or garment or collection is an item of clothing or a collection that's made to last. Quality is a very important part of what a trans-seasonal fashion item is, made well so that you would wear it over multiple seasons. I mean, you'd wear it for 10 years every winter and hopefully then repair it and wear it for another 10 years. And it can also mean that you can wear it in summer and winter and layer it with other trans-seasonal garments. And then it also kind of speaks to a capsule wardrobe, which means that you develop a wardrobe that is going to be trans-seasonal and last you for a very, very long time. And you build on the capsule so that you make sure that each item of clothing can be worn with other items of clothing. So it's a very considered way of looking at your wardrobe and your purchasing of clothes. It's not just random following of a trend that's been manufactured by the industry to get you to buy more just on a whim. And just because there's so much marketing and advertising that bombards us from all different directions, and especially with social media, we like, I mean, you know, there's stuff being thrown at us from all different directions and different platforms. So if you're not conscious or aware of what's happening to us, because it's happening at us and to us, it's so easy to fall for all the marketing tricks. So the trans-seasonal kind of idea is really, I love it. I think it's, you know, I wish I'd known about it when I first started buying clothes, because I would have had a much more useful wardrobe now.
I wish I'd also known about that. It sounds fantastic. A capsule wardrobe, maybe it's something I should try. I know I've tried before to have a few items and kind of layer them. Tell me a little bit about trends going forward. Let's actually talk directly about trends. What do you see, maybe 3 to 5 of the top trends in the industry going forward in 2025?
Okay, so I'm not going to. So I actually did a little Google, and AI like pushed out the trends, and it's very interesting. So leopard print, so your scarf, for instance, but you've had it, and it's interesting because that one keeps coming back, and it's pinks, which I love. I always love a pink. But I was quite interested in the trends for leather, faux leather, suede. I think that is so interesting that that's what AI threw at me this morning, because there's such a movement as well towards moving away from animal-based materials. I mean, not so much in South Africa, because I think we have a very different relationship to animals and to animal fibers and leather. But internationally, I think it might be Paris Fashion Week has actually banned exotic leather and furs. So for that to be kicked out by AI this morning was quite surprising to me. So those are the trends that, you know, and we know what the colour is this year. So those are the sort of superficial trends that we will see. I mean, they'll change. They'll be different in 2 months' time or next week or whatever. But for me, and what I'm much more positive about and what I will be promoting on Twig is, again, the localization. We're very interested in supporting local designers, local manufacturers, locally made product, but still understanding that we do live in a global world. So, you know, we don't necessarily have the best zip manufacturers locally, but we will be, you know, the best zip manufacturer might be in China, and, you know, quality is important. But as much locally made product as possible, because we're very interested in creating jobs. And I think jobs, local jobs, obviously not only give people employment, but also there's a pride, and it's about social cohesion, and it's about building healthy communities if people are employed and employed in their communities. So for me, that is like vitally important. So I'm really supportive of the retail clothing, textile, leather, footwear master plan and its objectives. And then also to support the creative industry. Working in the creative industry is very, very hard. Jobs are seasonal, jobs are project-based, and the beginning of this year, I know four people who took their lives, and they were all working in the creative industry. And I think it's a reflection on how hard this industry is. So to really, really, we've got to take it seriously. Without the arts, without the crafts, without local fashion, life would be really, really much poorer for it. You know, we wear and supporting designers who tell their cultural stories. I mean, clothes that are made locally reflect our cultures, they tell our stories, and there's a beautiful pride in that. And we're seeing it happening. We're seeing people, you know, who have got, when they do have disposable income, they're not wanting to go to the heritage Italian and French brands now. They want to buy local brands from Makosa. They want to buy an item from Tebi Maguru. They want to buy a Lucanio Madingi. They want to buy a Sindiso Kamado. Over and above those more, it's such a beautiful thing that's happening. And if you want to call that a trend or a movement, but I think that is something that we really need to support. And I love it. I love it for multiple reasons. So that for me is a very important movement rather than a trend. And I see it growing, and I see the interest, and I see the pride in buying clothes that are locally made and growing. Then I think that it is vitally important that we move away from plastic-based clothing. And 60% of clothes are made out of polyester, which is fossil-based, and that's part of driving climate change. So we have to move to natural fibers, and hopefully natural fibers made without the chemicals that are bad for the environment. But it's very important to move away from anything that's harmful for the planet, that's not, and that's releasing microfibers into the ocean. So natural fibers, and the climate crisis and how it relates to fashion is definitely something that is part of that trend or movement. And then that's two that I've mentioned. The third one is biodiversity, which is attached to climate change and the health of the planet. But that's looking at regenerative fashion. That's looking at understanding that fibers come from farms and how are those yarns and textiles produced from a farm level. Is it healthy for the soil? And then the last one is really looking at circular economy. The last one is looking, let me take a pause there. The last one is looking at circular economy methods and practices, and that involves swapping, mending, repairing, taking care of our clothes. And I think there's a wonderful, wonderful interest, more and more interest in that. And mending is a big one for us at Twig.
Some very interesting trends there. A last question, just kind of related to that, is South Africa often punches above its weight in many sectors. How can our local fashion industry make sure that it can do this, in particular with these circular economic models? Do you think we can get that right, that we could be a leader globally? I mean, our designers, like you said, a lot of our designers are doing really well. How do we boost this and promote this through making it sustainable and promoting that kind of environment?
I think the one thing that I haven't mentioned yet is made to order. Earlier this year, we published a piece from The Conversation which talked about how Ghana is a leader in circular fashion because of the made to order model. In fact, West Africa, Nigeria is also big on it. And I'm seeing more and more of that in South Africa as well, that a designer will launch a collection and it will be made to order. So you then order the piece, you order the garment, and they will make it once you pay for it. And I think it's fabulous because there's no waste involved with it. There's no excess stock that's created. So that is something that I'm seeing more and more of that being done, and I think it should be supported. There are definitely more and more designers doing repair services. There's a big trend for secondhand clothing. We're seeing that on lots of online platforms. I think it's fantastic if it's peer-to-peer selling of clothes and if it's not imported secondhand clothes. I'm a bit concerned that the thrifting trend or the thrifting movement is encouraging illegal import of secondhand clothes from the global north. We're seeing that as a big problem across the continent, and it is something that the government is concerned about. And that we're seeing more and more illegal imports of secondhand clothing into the country. So I'm very, very encouraging for it if it's locally, if it's our own clothes or locally made clothes, but to import secondhand clothes to sell on local platforms, I'm a little bit concerned about that, because again, that will impact our local industry negatively if that is the, if that is happening. So that was... Sorry, I just want to say, I think the one thing that... The one thing that I think we can pay more attention to is local innovation. We do have very strong references to traditional textile methods, to artisanal practices. What we're not really seeing much of, and it's, I think it's because there's a shortage of funding, is innovation and new solutions. And not that we necessarily have to go that route, but it would be nice to see more of that. I think it's exciting to think of how can we innovate new recycling, textile recycling, because we have to find a way to recycle blended fabrics. And this is a global issue, but it would be nice to see South Africans working on those issues as well. I'm actually working with some partners on kelp fabric. So it would be, it would be nice to see some new thinking and invigorate, especially young innovators to work on solutions.
I'm sure that we will see some of that in the future. South Africans are so resilient and they're also so innovative, and a lot of the young people are just amazing. I'm constantly amazed at the young people and what they come up with. It's been a wonderful conversation. Jackie, thank you so much. We really appreciate you joining us. I don't know if there's any last thoughts you'd like to add. I've really enjoyed our conversation though.
I think there really has been a wonderful decentering of the fashion narrative. So, for so long it was dominated by Western brands, by big global multinationals, and we're definitely seeing a decentering of that narrative. I mean, partly because there's such a interest and focus on local brands, beautiful luxury and emerging brands in South Africa. And but also there's a lot of real work happening in understanding what fashion means. If I think about my friend and colleague, Dr. Erica de Greef, what she's done with African Fashion Research Institute, and they've just put on an exhibition at the African Museum in Braamfontein called, I'm just going to find the name quickly, called Fashion Accounts. It's Fashion Accounts at Museum Africa, and it's looking at the archives and what's been classified as fashion and what's not been classified as fashion, and actually deconstructing that to give the African fashion, center the African fashion more than what the Western fashion has been getting so up to now in that archive.
That's a great point, actually. We're seeing that in a lot of industries where we're actually starting to look at Africa and looking at it from our own point of view and not from a Western point of view. So that's a really great point.
It struck me as well, and I didn't mention it, but the upcycling, I've kind of done a lot of work in Africa and really kind of, I'm quite passionate about reaching out to colleagues on the continent. And there's a bit of a backlash against seeing African designers as upcyclers, because it means that the West can dump their secondhand clothing or their waste into Africa and Africans will sort it out and create these amazing kind of creative garments out of their waste. When in fact, why should Africans be using waste to create fashion? We also want to create beautiful garments out of virgin fabrics that are made in Africa and by Africans. So just from a cultural perspective and from a dignity perspective, why should we be shining a light on upcyclers? Because waste is not an African issue, it's a global waste and it's a Western capitalist problem. So it's very interesting and to be aware of, as you said, the unintended consequences and whose dignity? I mean, I went to Harare, it was just so devastating. And I visited the second-hand clothing market there, and it's just unbelievable to see. But somebody said to me, you know, we don't have a fashion culture anymore. We have a reworn culture, and because it's just broken the fashion system completely, and it's done that in many of the African countries. It's really dangerous.
I was just going to say to you, you know, that the point you made about thrifting is so interesting to me. That something that starts off as a positive thing then somehow has an unintended consequence that's negative. And so that was very interesting for me, that point you made about how it might be leading to, you know, the import of secondhand goods. Jackie, thank you so much for chatting to us today. It's been such a great conversation, so many interesting points. And we're going to be looking at Twig in the future, and hopefully we'll have you back maybe next year, and we'll take this a bit further. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was very nice chatting to you. Thank you.